Education will come to order. We are going to take House Bill 2509 last in the order of the agenda. There has been a crash on I-5, which is delaying the arrival of some of our folks that are working on that bill. So I am first going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 63. Kevin, do you want to give us a brief?
Not a problem. Chair Gelser, members of the committee, this is a measure that comes from us from the Senate. Senate Bill 63 repeals ORS 329-265, which currently permits school districts utilizing child development specialist programs to seek reimbursement of their costs. It also provides that the repeal of 329-265 applies to costs incurred in the fiscal quarters on or after the effective date of the measure, and this is an emergency, so it will be effective upon passage.
Thank you. And do we have anybody signed up to... Morgan, do you want to talk to us about Senate Bill 63? Morgan Allen, please.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, and members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education, and I kind of feel like the rock band that no one's really interested in hearing before the start of a big rock concert, but I'm kind of the warm-up act for today. I'll talk a little bit about Senate Bill 63, which is a bill from the Department of Education. It's really just a technical cleanup bill. It removes an obsolete provision from Oregon statute related to payments to school districts for their child development specialist programs. And just to give you a little bit of background, I know many of the committee members know this, back in the early 70s, child development specialist programs were created by the legislature to help districts better serve students and families when there was a real shortage of school counselors. And the work that they do is very similar to a school counselor in nature. And in what seems like ages ago, the legislature used to actually give funds to the Department of Education to provide grants to school districts to help pay for their child development specialist programs. And I checked with our staff, the last grant that went out was to the Ashland School District during the 1991-92 school year, so just to kind of give you a sense of the last time any monies were available for this. And then in the 1999 session, the legislature limited the services of child development specialists and no longer allowed school districts to have these staff in high school, so they can only be in elementary schools and middle schools. So all Senate Bill 63 does is repeal this obsolete provision. It's ORS 329-265. It's still on the books. It would still require our agency to provide reimbursement to school districts if they came to us and asked, and we, again, haven't had money for that for almost 20 years, and none of our staff can remember a district asking for these funds in any recent times. We have a statewide Child Development Specialist Advisory Committee at the department, and our folks apparently ran this by them, and they don't have any problems with it. Passage of the bill won't disrupt the child development specialist programs in any district. It will have no financial impact on school districts or the department. Again, it just simply removes that obsolete statute. And the Senate passed the bill 28-0 on February 11th, and we hope that the House does the same. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mark. And I hope we can muster more than 28 votes for you.
I was going to say.
Are there any questions for Morgan? Representative Kopp.
I have a problem with the, thank you, Mr. Allen, for your presentation, with the concept that this is an outdated, possibly, maybe it's outdated only because it hasn't been funded. I know that the child development specialist is a critical component to many schools. And so I struggle with the concept of removing it.
Well, Chair Gelser and Representative Comp, just to clarify, all we're removing is the requirement that if a school district came to the department and said, pay for our program, that we would be obligated in the current statute to pay for that, and we have not received any monies from the legislature in almost 20 years to do that. It wouldn't impact the programs, and schools can still have the folks in their classes. So maybe that's a little technical.
What?
That would help you sort of get there.
Chair, it doesn't help me get there at all, because right now those child development specialists are, the funds go through education service districts, right?
Chair Gelson, Representative Comp, I believe most of the school districts, if not all of them, there are about 200 child development specialists still in Oregon in K-8 schools, and I believe those are paid for with their state school fund appropriation or school improvement fund dollars.
Okay, that's helping. It's moving me that your direction.
Are there further questions for Morgan?
Somebody has a phone on.
Yes, if I failed to make the announcement, if you have a telephone with you, please don't just turn it to silent. Turn it all the way off. If you hear that little twing, twing, twing sound, I promise not to sing for you. That is the interference of a cell phone on the recording. So please turn them all the way off. Representative Comp.
I'm getting closer because I haven't thought about this. So how does this compare with a speech pathologist? I mean, is this kind of, like you say, is it so distant in the past that there isn't a comparative pool of employees?
Chair Gelser and Representative Comp, and I'm trying to think, I know we've had conversations with Representative Greenlick in the interim about this, and he's interested in sort of expanding these programs and mm-hmm. actually a license from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and trying to get schools like Portland State School of Social Work to license and offer these types of programs. I think the best parallel I could draw is they're pretty close to a school counselor. That was really why they were created. They were created to sort of do those kinds of works and help advise students. When they used to be allowed in high schools, I believe they would do academic advising and things like that. Now, you know, they probably play more of the counselor role and help students who might have troubles in their school. So I'm not sure that parallel is 100% right, but it's probably in the ballpark.
Representative Dimbrough? No, Representative Roblin.
Thank you. Do we have any other statute that requires you, if requested, to pay for their position like this one?
Chair Gelser and Representative Roblin, I would need to double-check that. I'm not sure off the top of my head. Cindy Hunt and I were looking for some things to clean up this session, and this was one of them. And I don't remember any other things that we saw that we thought we needed to get off the books that sort of involved payments that may not have been made for decades.
Yeah, so I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there any further questions? So we have this bill posted for a public hearing and possible work session. Is there are people comfortable closing this public hearing and opening a work session?
Well, I was going to say I'm not comfortable for voting for this at this time, but don't have a problem if you want to move the bill.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move it because I think we're going to have a lot of things on the schedule. So I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 63. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 63 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So Representative Dimbrough moves House Bill 63 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Representative Comp?
Thank you, Chair Gelser. At this time, because I believe that all options should be still left available if school districts so deem that they might want to go this way, and if people want to come and testify, say, we need to fund this as part of a need for a school district. I have worked with incredible child development specialists at the middle school and high school level, and so, I would like to leave this as an option available, and at that point, I would be a no vote at this time.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I have a question.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I have a question for Representative Comp. If I can recall it. Since the legislature has chosen not to fund it,
mm-hmm.
does that really make a difference? In the fact that they want to repeal something that we're not even funding anymore?
My response would be if we funded this position, we would probably have them in our schools.
Yeah, very well.
And my esteemed colleague may think differently, which I'd love to hear.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My feeling is that we have elected school boards around the state who have to make really difficult decisions with the values, with the money that they have in putting things in. I value these positions. I think they are great. But having something that singles out one group over all the other teachers and everybody else makes no sense to me. And it's saying that this has a higher value than something else has. And I think school boards have to make very difficult decisions, and that they are the people in their communities who should make decisions at their community level about what programs they're going to offer. And so some choose to have school nurses, others choose not to have school nurses. Some choose to have these specialists, others choose to have school counselors. This doesn't change the fact that they can still hire these people. There is no requirement that they not. They can pay it out of their state school fund just like they pay anybody else. So there is no difference, except that we have this old bill that says if they ask, we'll pay it, and we've never given them any money to do it. So it makes no sense to me. I think there was a time when we were trying to push for child development specialists, and I think they have shown their usefulness, and that's why we still have a bunch of them out there doing good work. I wish every school had the money and the availability to do it, but I don't think this bill changes that at all. It only says that if asked, the State Department doesn't have to say, I'm sorry, we don't have any money. They can say, if you want it really bad, you should fund it. We're giving you X number of dollars in the state school fund. Make the decision how to spend that money, and if you believe the best thing to do is to have child development specialists, we think you're well within your rights, and that's something you should do.
So. Thank you. Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to wrap my head around how this works here, but we've begun the challenging discussion about how we may have to revamp various aspects of the state's education system. If we were to repeal this, as is being proposed, would we regret it in a little while? Would it perhaps, is it a vehicle for making some of the changes that we are considering? I don't see that it immediately is, but I wonder about that. Any thoughts? Including, Harker, that's nuts.
Well, that's part of my perspective. It's a door that has been left on the books and has been left open. I don't know that it's going to make any difference if we close the door.
And it hasn't been used for. I'm sorry.
Well, please finish.
It hasn't been used for a long time, but the times that we're looking at in the next few years are different than what we've been looking at for the past X years.
And I would argue that if the legislature chose to fund the position, since this isn't eliminating these types of positions or the ability to use them, at the time the legislature decided to spend money to do that, it could easily, in the same bill, create the authority to do that.
And actually, Chair Gailser and Representative Parker, it puts us in an odd position. I believe, and Cindy Hunt is not here today to back me up on this, so I'm going to play amateur lawyer, but I believe right now if a school district presented us with essentially a bill for their program, that we would be obligated by statute to pay for it, and we don't have any money to do that, so we would have to eliminate some other program that the legislature has deemed a priority for our agency to carry out and pay for a school district's child development specialist program. So that's really what we're hoping to avoid. It's just it doesn't have anything to do with the allowance of child development specialists. It's just essentially, to get to the heart of the matter, we don't want to be presented with a bill that we cannot pay or actually would be forced to pay and make some really difficult decisions otherwise.
Thank you.
Representative Rublin?
I was going to say your comments. Right, I appreciate it.
There any further discussion? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Comp?
No.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Rublin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Wormen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Denbrough?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Gilzer?
Aye. The majority of required votes, the motion passes. Representative Van Orman, would you carry this bill?
Sure. Please?
Thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 63 and open a work session on House Bill 2544. Colleagues, House Bill 2544 is that Oregon Environmental Literacy Task Force. We discussed it a couple of weeks ago. At that time, we were concerned about the fiscal, about adding some language to the bill, some preamble language. And if you'll remember, this is the bill that would set us up to be able to receive a little over $1 million in federal funds. The amendments, if we were to attach the dash 3 amendment to this bill, the fiscal impact would drop from $50,000 to $10,000. The dash 2 amendment, can you help me with which one is which, Kevin?
Yeah, if you'd like me to just kind of give a quick preview. There are 3 amendments with respect to this. The dash 1 amendment creates essentially a preamble that's a policy statement. Dash number 2 includes an additional member of the committee that is needs to be a representative of the local park and recreation association. And the dash 3 amendment reduces on page 3, line 19 of the bill itself, reduces the amount of the appropriation from $50,000 to $10,000. As I understand it from talking to fiscal, what that would essentially do is have a $10,000 fiscal overall, and that's including all 3 amendments. So it'd be the dash 1, 2, and 3 as well as the bill.
And I also received an email today from Tracy Price, who spoke to us about this measure during the public hearing, and she has thus far been able to get commitments for about $25,000 in private funds to also help support this effort. So is there discussion about this bill? Representative Van Orman.
A question, Madam Chair. So in 2011-13, they're anticipating that they will have enough other income that they won't need any general fund income, correct?
I believe that is the case, although it may be that the work of the task force is done by the time. Yes, because their report comes on October 1st of 2010.
Thank you. That explains it.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you recall, I don't know, it's been a week or so ago now when we initially had the conversation about the amendments, and you assigned that to Representative Mowern, and I followed him along because he has more experience than I do. And we chatted about that, and I actually was the one who said, you know, maybe we ought to put $10,000 on that. And I've reflected, and I've thought about that a lot, and certainly in these times when we're crunching every little number, I quite frankly at this time regret saying that. I'm concerned about any fiscal impact that we have at this point. And I realize there's some money that has come forward. Originally it was $50,000, so we're not there yet. So I have real concerns about any impact this would have on the budget at this point.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did we determine if that $25,000 in private monies could be channeled into ODE or something to be used to offset that?
Yes.
They can't accept it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they can. And if we do pass this bill out of committee today, of course it goes to Ways and Means, and it does not necessarily have a certain future there as we get to balancing the numbers and counting every dollar, as Representative Springer has mentioned. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I think you heard the bill. I was excused that day, and I do have some proposed amendments. I realize it's probably going to move out without it, but I would like to distribute these to the committee if I may.
Of course.
Do you want me to pass them around? Or
yes, please. That would be great. And do you want to describe what they do?
What it says is basically starting on line 2, and it might come out of LC a little differently, but starting on page 2, line 28, add to section 2, subsection 2, another section after C, add another section that says D. This is what the goals, this would just add one more goal to the plan, and it would be to establish definition of environmental literacy, climate change, and healthy lifestyle. Those seem like subjective terms. I just wanted to make sure that we defined them. And on the same page, starting on line 41, I guess move that down and add a section G after the F there. You see F? Move that sub A down out of the way. So there would be a new section G where I should have said how the Department of Education and educational agencies shall present diverse viewpoints and research on environmental literacy. So just another... The task force shall identify the following for their plan. That would be one of the things that they would identify, is how they would present diverse.
Great. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With full appreciation of the fiscal concerns, one of the things that we've tried to do or use as a guiding principle was to not cut money that would wind up leaving federal dollars on the table somewhere. And I don't remember all of the details about this, but my recollection is that this is primarily to set something up so that we would qualify for what are perceived to be significant federal dollars coming our way. And if that's the case, and I see some heads nodding out there, I would think that it might be $10,000 well spent.
Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the difficulties, and I appreciate Representative Springer's point of view, because we are trying to be fiscally responsible, but the difficulty I think we have as a policy committee is we are not part of the big picture. And so you've got a committee of ways and means that has to look at the big picture and then make the decision about how they're going to be able to balance the budget. So I'm thinking in terms of policy, I think it's in our best interest to pass on what we think is good policy and then let ways and means struggle with whether or not the money's there to fund it. And I just think because they have the big picture and we don't, but we have the privilege of determining what's good policy.
Thank you. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this session's a little different. In last session, that we took that stand, I mean, quite clearly, and a lot of things unfortunately died in ways and means for a number of reasons, some of them really good. But I think the direction of the speaker is, in fact, that we are to look at the fiscal and to prioritize, and that the fiscal is really, it is incumbent upon us. That's why we have to have a fiscal before we send it out. Of course, this one, it's part of the bill, the $10,000. But, I don't know what else we have coming that's going to have fiscals attached to it. And so I guess I'm looking at you, Madam Chair, and say, how are you going to handle this? Because it's come up one other time. Are we going to stack them up and say, this is my priority, and then we can go from there, or are we going to piecemeal it out? Because, $10,000 is $10,000, and hopefully this was free. There was a lot of conversation about available private funding, because we're not leveraging federal dollars from a match standpoint. We're only leveraging federal dollars from a policy standpoint. The policy allows you to access grants.
Well, I think that was a question that was posed to me. I personally am comfortable sending this down to Ways and Means, partly because of the small dollar figure that's associated with it, also because I do think that there is the potential to set this up and have private dollars come in and relieve that fiscal. But more importantly, I do believe it has that ability to leverage a significant amount of federal dollars to bring in and enhance what we have. And I think that makes it different than some of the other bills that we'll see. We have held some others that would be ongoing changes in policies. Again, this is also just a one-time cost rather than a new program that has a roll-up cost. I'm thinking specifically of the vision screening is a place where we've had this conversation, and many of us are interested in moving that forward. But with those, I think we need to wait for another couple of weeks while we're waiting to see all of the information come in. We're about to see where all the bills are, and that's going to give us the big picture of what we have in this committee. I do anticipate that we will pass bills out of this committee that do have a fiscal impact attached to them, and they'll go down to Ways and Means to be further weighed there. We won't pass out everything that we like in the committee, but hopefully we can have an open round of communication about these things. I think today, Representative Thatcher, have you submitted these to Legislative Council yet?
Yeah.
You have?
They are.
Do you think they could be back by Wednesday?
Yes.
So I think today, because I want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to contribute to the conversation and the committee has the opportunity to consider all four amendments. So I'm going to hold the work session open on this bill until Wednesday, and then we'll come back and the committee can decide which of the four amendments to adopt. And as we start moving on this, things are going to start moving more quickly as we have bills. So make sure you're getting your amendments in quickly. quickly. And if you have a bill and you know you're going to want to have amendments on it, I know we've been kind of slow at getting to the work sessions, let me know pretty quickly so that I can make sure to let you know when we're scheduling the work session, and that way we can keep the flow moving pretty quickly. Representative Roblin.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My issue on this one is I'm one of those people who thinks this is probably a wise investment of $10,000. However, my hope is that if it gets to Ways and Means and Ways and Means decides they don't want to spend the $10,000, we can still pass the policy. I mean, can we still get the policy out? So I would hope that you would go in that two-week period that they have people talk and say, from the priority standpoint, we believe having the policy is really essential. So if they can't afford the $10,000, let them cut it, but still send the bill out to us with no cost, so that we can at least get the policy in place, so then we can figure out how we go about accessing that other dollars. Mm. I think the $10,000 is okay, and I'm okay sending it that way. But in the final analysis, as they go through that big budget, I would like them to know that our priority is that policy gets set the way we want it. And then we'll figure out, and advocates can figure out how to find the money to fund the policy, so that we can actually be prepared to accept the money from the federal government if it's coming along. And I like all the amendments. I don't see anything wrong with all of them so far. So.
Great. Thank you. I guess the one thing is we need to get that fiscal back. So, Kevin, can you get this to our fiscal person as well? Even before we have it in the amendment form, that might be able to help her. Are there any further comments for discussion today on this bill? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to hold this over. I'm going to hold the work session over to Wednesday, March 4th, and I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2544. Has the crash cleared? Oh, great. All right. So just in time, we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2509. And would you give an overview of House Bill 2509, please?
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. House Bill 2509 requires each school district to provide age-appropriate sex education courses in all public elementary and secondary schools as an integral part of the health education curriculum. It also sets forth certain standards that must be met in terms of the program, the sex education program that is presented to the committee. The measure itself, if passed, would apply to the 2009-2010 school year, and it is, in fact, an emergency and would be effective July 1st, 2009.
Thank you. And our first panel on House Bill 2509 is... Okay, there's four people on this panel, and there are three chairs. So I'm going to trust you. Morgan Allen and Brad Victor from ODE, Catherine Bradley, and Belit Stockfleth. Yes.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Morgan Allen for the Department of Education. I didn't realize when I was joking earlier about being the opening act, I'd also be the first act of this.
And it was a very good opening act. We all had our lighters out.
Joining me today is Brad Victor, who's the Human Sexuality Education Specialist at the Department of Education. And we're going to share our thoughts on House Bill 2509 with you. And I just want to mention that both the department and Superintendent Castillo are supportive of House Bill 2509 because we believe it will help ensure that comprehensive human sexuality education is available to students in our public schools. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Victor for a moment.
Chair Gelser, committee members. House Bill 2509 gives...
Can you state your name for the record just to start, please?
Pardon me. Brad Victor.
Thank you.
House Bill 2509 gives clarity to Oregon's statute. Its comprehensive human sexuality education is abstinence-based and emphasizes that abstinence is the only 100% safe and effective way to prevent unintended pregnancies and disease like HIV and AIDS. It also ensures that medically accurate and age-appropriate information about human sexuality is included in school curriculum. House Bill 2509 helps to clarify the responsibilities of school districts and charter schools to offer a comprehensive program to students. It also provides a much-needed statutory update to reflect current best practices in teaching human sexuality. In Oregon, comprehensive human sexuality education must be age-appropriate, validate honesty, dignity, and respect for oneself and others, teach effective communication, and encourage family communication, and as stated earlier, stress abstinence as the healthiest choice for school-age youth. Experts in the area of health education and nationally recognized health organizations, such as the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics, all agree that research-based comprehensive sexuality education programs lead to positive health behaviors by students. As a result of these programs, students are capable of understanding how their decisions can positively and negatively impact their lives and the lives of others. Research-based comprehensive sexuality education programs give students the knowledge and skills that enable them to stay healthy and grow into responsible community members.
And Chair Gelser, a couple other points that we'd like to make about House Bill 2509. I think it's very important that this bill retains local control for school districts in Oregon communities. It's not an unfunded mandate for school districts. It does not create new reporting requirements or bureaucracy for our local schools. As you might expect, schools in Oregon are already required to offer comprehensive human sexuality courses as part of their curriculum. And as you know, Oregon has a long tradition of allowing communities, their locally elected school boards, and parents and other citizens to decide what curriculum is best for their schools, and this bill does not change that. So just to sum up the testimony of the department, again, 2509 makes needed terminology changes and additions that we believe will help provide guidance and a policy framework for local decision makers to implement an effective, comprehensive program in their schools. And we know that when districts are empowered to make these choices, that will positively impact teen pregnancy rates and lower the incidence of sexually transmitted disease amongst our youth. And with that, we'll turn it over to our fellow panelists.
Thank you. Catherine.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Members of the committee, we are here to testify this morning in the Department of Human Services. I'm Catherine Bradley. I'm the administrator of the Office of Family Health, and my colleague.
I'm Belize Stockbeth. I'm the Food Stamps and Prevention Programs Manager for Self-Sufficiency Children, Adults, and Families.
There's been a longstanding tradition within DHS that the Public Health Division and the Children's, Adults, and Family Division have worked together very closely on this work and this agenda. We are testifying in support of House Bill 2509. We do strongly support age-appropriate comprehensive sexuality education. This actually is reflective of our new Oregon Sexual Health Plan for Youth that will be coming out shortly and be shared with all members of the legislature and with our communities, in which we really focus on this evidence-based approach. We believe it's important that communities work closely with their families and their youth in terms of education around abstinence, healthy relationships, refusal skills, effective use of contraceptives, pregnancy prevention, and sexually transmitted diseases. The issue of comprehensive education to us really is much broader. It takes it off of a single topic focus and really helps our youth to be safe, make good decisions, and be well-informed, particularly for us in the arena of healthy relationships, refusal skills, and the ability to negotiate appropriately and have the skill sets and knowledge in which to make good decisions. This has been an evidence-based approach. It has been researched and found that for those students that have comprehensive sexuality education, it effectively delays the initiation of sexual intercourse. It increases the use of contraception in those who do choose to be sexually active, and it also reduces sexually transmitted diseases. We have information in our testimony that refers to some of the national work that has been done and some of the research. I think that was well covered by our colleagues in education. The other thing we wanted to point out, and it is something that this legislature deals with consistently in the last paragraph, is that an analysis by the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancies shows that in teen childbearing years in Oregon in 2004 cost us up to $91 million. And those are all the implications of unintended pregnancies that we're well familiar with teen parents, Medicaid, the Medicaid implications, plans and all the social services implications that we all struggle with. So we do believe that comprehensive sexuality education is an important component that we need to support. Therefore, the Public Health Division and Children's, Adults, and Families strongly support this, and we're available for your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Representative Thatcher.
I was looking at the bill, and it didn't look like it changed really the existing law all that much, so I'm wondering what the compelling reason to have this bill is.
Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, I think there are a couple of changes in there that talks that are intended to sort of bring it up to speed. I believe it adds a couple definitions of hepatitis and a few things like that in the, that aren't in the original statute. So I think, in fact, your assertion is correct. This will not change much of what's going on in our schools right now. It just it updates the statute. And again, school districts are already required to offer comprehensive human sexuality education. So,
Have you heard of any schools that are not, and are parents having a hard time getting these districts to conform to the statute as it is?
Chair Gelser and Representative Representative Thatcher. I'm scoring some points today. I apologize. We are not aware at the department of any school districts that aren't offering a comprehensive human sexuality education course as part of their curriculum. And again, the beauty of Oregon is that we have local control, and the locally elected school boards and communities have a lot of say in what goes into what they teach in their schools.
I've been called a lot of things, and I'll have to add that one to my list. Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm still not hearing what the compelling reasons are for this. We're changing a couple definitions, clarifying hepatitis C, and I don't remember. I don't have the bill right in front of me. But what are the big reasons for having this bill now?
Well, my last shot at this, Chair Gelson, Representative Thatcher, is I think that the statute is nearly 20 years old, and there's some other technical changes that Legislative Council has also made in the bill that sort of reflects modern statutory language, and I hope that some of my fellow panelists or some of the other people out coming up might be able to help answer your question. That's about as good as I can do.
So it's basically an update then, I guess.
My understanding, Representative Thatcher, from talking to some folks that have worked on this, is that it is basically an update that kind of comes into line with the standards that the Department of Ed has already updated. It's been a long time since the statute has been updated. I think looking through this, a couple of the pieces that pop out at me are, hepatitis C, really focusing on the prevention of sexually transmitted disease, a continued focus on abstinence, and looking at all methods of sexual protection. I think it's clearly an updating where it's not the 1990s anymore.
I understand, but here's what's weird to me. It's a lot of bills we've had streamlining or combining or updating, and they kind of indicate that in the summary up above. And this one almost makes it sound like it's a new requirement, because it says, requires school districts to provide human sexuality education courses in all public elementary and secondary schools as part of health education curriculum. And it sounds like we're already doing that. So why, it sounds like it is, we're trying to add a new requirement. So I'm trying to drill down and figure out what's in here. Other than just technical changes.
Madam Chair. I've got Representative Comp in the queue and then Van Orman. So let's do this so we have a little bit of a conversation. Representative Comp.
The key piece that I see in this bill is that in Section 1, sub 1, is that 20 years ago we didn't have some of the really age-appropriate curriculum that we have now. And I remember when I was on the school board when we first started this a long time ago, and how you talk about having boundaries with a second grader is very different, and we have, the curriculum is just a lot more advanced about how to make sure that our children are safe at all times now.
Thank you, Representative Van Orman.
Well, I think the telling statement for me, and I agree with Representative Thatcher. I think the introductory sentence is sort of misleading, but I think the key factor for me is be medically accurate. Line 13, that's a new addition. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
And for me, that's the key, one of the major reasons why it should be changed, because we do want medically accurate, and we certainly want best practices.
Thank you. Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The two things that I have problems with are the things that were taken out of the bill, and that's lines 28 through 30, page 1, about the discussion of possible emotional, physical, and psychological consequences of sexual intercourse, et cetera. And then on page 2, line 7, about advising pupils of the laws pertaining to their financial responsibility. I mean, that's a scared straight kind of statement, but I mean, what is the purpose of deleting that language?
Representative Maurer, Chair Gelser, if I might, this is Catherine Bradley. What I wanted to speak to was actually one of the intentions of some of the definitional work that also goes into the statute behind the scenes that actually makes it clearer. We do know how working definitions for age-appropriate and for medically accurate, so it provides better guidance to the schools. And that issue about age-appropriate is specifically relevant then to lines 27, I believe, or 28 through 30. So, for example, for age-appropriate, part of the definition is curriculum designed to teach concepts, information, and skills based on the social, cognitive, emotional, and experiential level of students. So it was felt that actually in the definitional work of age-appropriate, that actually takes the place of what had previously been listed there.
Representative Maurer.
No, and so the same is for line 7 of page 2?
Representative Maurer, I believe the intent was similar in that the definitional work that goes behind this that came from the governor's teen pregnancy prevention and adolescent sexual health partnership is what substantiates the bill.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So it's really, I want to paraphrase what you're saying. So what you're saying is, is the term age-appropriate, there's the subordinate standards that says what's age-appropriate for mm-hmm. kindergarten and high school, and obviously they're going to be different, mm-hmm. and these issues would be addressed at the appropriate time.
Chair Gelson, Representative Maurer, that's our understanding, and okay. That really is the intent. So we have less that's specifically a statute and more that supports the statute in rule.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there... Representative Thatcher, we kind of wandered away from your question.
No,
did that help at all?
You kind of wandered on to another place. So you talked about a background definition. Is that in rule or is that in statute somewhere? I didn't see it in the bill. That's what I'm asking.
Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, both of those statements are still in rule OAR 581-022-1440. And they still exist in rule. And it does go back to the age appropriate, of which Oregon Department of Education has age appropriate sexuality education guidelines for school district as a document that's provided to all school districts, and it's broken down into K through 3, 4 through 5, 6 through 8, and 9 through 12. And it addresses these different issues, particularly with regards to, as Representative Maurer was talking about, as far as financial responsibilities as you get into middle school and high school level curriculum.
Very good.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you. And Representative Maurer took a couple of my points, so I'm going to drill. No. So I'm going to move past those and drill down, though, on one of them in regards to... line 7, advise pupils. You got to love the word pupils. Of the laws pertaining to their financial responsibility, and we talked about that being in the age-appropriate sexuality education topic guidelines. I'm assuming this document here from ODE.
Yes.
And so, now I could have missed it because I instantly went here and started looking through this. When I look through grades 9 through 12, and it gives, 17 areas to discuss. Maybe I missed it because I did this quickly. I don't see financial implications addressed here.
I don't have that document in front of me, so.
Can he borrow mine? If you're familiar with it and can find it, can we do that?
I don't think we have that. Where did you get that document?
Yeah, right.
Do we have that at the dais?
Our caucus office. Our policy people.
Okay.
And he just downloaded it from ODE.
Okay. do have extra copies so that others of us can
read along. I'm sorry. I just had it in my file, and that clicked when he said that.
But I'll share it.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, let's stand at ease for a minute while we get copies for everyone. So we're just going to stand at ease, and that way we can all be part of the conversation. All right, we are no longer at ease. I guess that means we are all free to be tense again. So we've just...
Could I?
Thank you.
I just wanted to preface, I didn't mean to surprise this and drop this on anybody. I had it in my pile of articles along with the 12 and 14-year-old couple, if you will, in England, where he was asked about the financial cost of having a baby, and he says, I don't know what financial means. And so people have been giving me all these things, and I had this, so as soon as we started, yeah, very legit. And so as soon as we started talking about that, I went to this document that's not dated. And so that was one of my first questions. But it does talk about those guidelines that you referenced, and I don't see a financial piece in here. And I just think that's so important to have included, and I want to make sure that's not lost from this dais and that house floor to the classroom.
Chair Gelson, Representative Springer, thank you for pointing that out to us. Mr. Victor and I were reviewing this, and numbers 5 and 12 kind of get at that, hopefully, but we think that we can go back and get that revised and make that very explicit in these. We have no issues with that, and we will commit to doing that.
Follow up. Getting a little free here. Is there a reason, and I don't know if I'm posing the question appropriately to you, Morgan, or not, is there a reason that language needs to be pulled out? Why does it need to be omitted? Morgan says, that one's not mine.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think maybe I evidently just misunderstood the exchange, because what I thought you said about 5 and 12 addressing and blah, 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 I thought you were saying, hey, we should leave that language in there.
Chair Gelson, Representative Parker, what I was suggesting was that I think Representative Springer has raised a good point, and that 5 and 12 kind of get at what she's talking about, but that we can go and add, there are 17 in there, and I don't see why there's any reason why we couldn't add an 18th in that and have that be part of the discussion.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
Along the same line, Morgan, this is a... Guidelines. It's not a rule.
That's correct.
And so here we have a statute. We should have rules that go along with the statute. And I guess what I'm asking is, in any of the rules, are any of these things specific? For example, the same things that we're taking out, not in these guidelines, but in the actual rules, administrative rules that we have for the implementation.
Chair Gelson, Representative Rilvin, yes, that specific sentence about advising students about financial responsibility is in the current Oregon administrative rule.
And so, follow up. So from my perspective, again, I guess I would go back and say, when we're giving guidelines, we should probably look at both the statute and the administrative rules and try to make sure the guidelines at least cover those things. If we want to cover a few more, it would be okay. And this is an omission that school boards then would look at the guidelines assuming that those things were in it. And I guess that's my frustration that it wasn't here. So.
Thank you. Are there further questions, Representative Dembrough?
Just a comment, Madam Chair. You know, I think that that topic does belong in the guidelines, but however it's put in the guidelines, I hope it's better written. I mean, I would want this line taken out just because it's vague and really doesn't clearly say what we're talking about. That is, you know, we're encouraging young people that there are going to be financial consequences if they have children. They'll have to be responsible. I'm not sure the line as it is in statute now really captures that.
I think maybe it should include college tuition, which is what I'm looking at right now.
Thank you, Representative Parker. Representative Kampf. Mm.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Allen, do you have the OAR number?
Yes, the Oregon Administrative Rule is OAR 581-022-1440, I believe.
And you do that again.
Yeah, I'm real slow. 022.
581-022-1440.
Thank you.
Are there further questions for this panel? Representative Van Orman.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. As long as Representative Harberger got his plug in for tuition, I would like to put in my plug for parenting. If there's any lament out there in the field when we're working with children, is the lack of parenting skills that we keep running up against in all arenas. So at some point in time, that's a critical issue for me.
Thank you, Representative Van Orman. Any further? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan?
Share this person. No, I'm not.
I'll sleep on the back of the bus again with all the discussion. Could you please explain to me what you're going to do when you leave here?
Chair Gelser and Representative Huffman, what I'm going to do when I leave here. Well, first I'm going to go to the Senate Education Committee, but then I'm going to go back to the department, and I think Mr. Victor and I will talk about getting an appropriate guideline about the fiduciary and parenting responsibilities that go on. I'm kind of envisioning that 10-pound sack of sugar plus maybe a cash register that the kids would have to carry around for a week or something like that.
Ka-ching.
No.
Follow up.
Was that referencing page 2, line 7? Did we drop the discussion on page 1, lines 28 through 30?
There are
or were, other, was there going to be the, some work done on that also?
Those are currently in the
age-appropriate guidelines.
The age-appropriate.
We determined that the OAR did cover those sufficiently.
And these.
And the guidelines. OARs and guidelines. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure if there was going to be rework or if we had decided that maybe that should be left in or... Okay.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
That's pretty good.
Well, a couple questions. One was based on the rule. You're talking about an OAR. The rules are based on statute. If we remove certain language from the statute, wouldn't that follow that the rule would have to change too?
Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, I would need to talk to our legal affairs coordinator to get you the specific answer to that question.
Okay. And one more.
Sure,
maybe
follow
the
up.
Same question, but just maybe phrase a little differently. What will be changing after this bill is passed? Besides having medically accurate information and perhaps no more education on financial responsibilities, what is the bottom line change?
Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, I'm not an expert on human sexuality education, but I don't believe very much. Just language in the statute is going to change.
I would argue that change of really ensuring that what we're offering to our students is medically accurate is a pretty significant and important clarification in the law, as well as really making sure that we're clearly bracketing this within the purview of health education. We're talking about this as a health issue is, I think, very, very critical.
Well, then my question to you, Madam Chair, would be, do you think that caption at the top should be changed to emphasize really what the changes are rather than restating what already is law and making it sound like it's becoming new?
You, right where it says the required school districts to provide. I've had occasion to receive bills back when I don't necessarily understand the summary statement that's there. And so I always refer to the sentence that says it is an editor's brief statement of the essential features of the bill and that it's not prepared by the sponsors of the bill. So, I mean, we don't really get to edit the summary.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wondered if we could. We edit the editor.
Just throwing that out there. Are there further questions for this panel? Representative Roblin.
I am, after having read it over one more time and looked, there is no specific indication anywhere else in the statute with regard to the financial responsibility. So taking this out wouldn't take it away from you doing it. It just doesn't explicitly ask you to do it. So I guess I would be a little concerned about that one. And so check that out when you go back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any further questions? No? Thank you. We have another panel. Thank you very much for your testimony. Mary Gossert, Judy Zimmerman, and Maggie Jenny. Thank you, welcome.
Thank you.
And the way it works, if you just state your name for the record and then share your remarks, that would be very helpful.
Chair Gelser, members of the House Education Committee, my name is Mary Gossert. I'm the Vice President of Education at Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2509. I apologize for the voice that comes and goes, that coal thing happening. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. In addition to being the Vice President of Education and Training at Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, I'm also a member of the Teen Pregnancy Prevention and Sexual Health Partnership, which was formed in 2005 with the support of the Governor's Office and a number of public-private health partners to create a strategic action plan that addresses youth sexual health in Oregon. I'm here today on behalf of my affiliate, Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, and our sister affiliate, Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette. A core piece of Planned Parenthood's mission is to increase young people's access points for comprehensive sex education. And to that end, our Planned Parenthoods provide training and resources for parents, for faith leaders, and educators, all of whom play critical roles in educating young people about sexual health issues. We also provide programs directly for youth around the state, and we work in a variety of settings, including schools. Last year, Planned Parenthood education programs reached well over 35,000 Oregon youth and adults. Young people need and deserve age-appropriate, medically accurate sex education that supports them in making healthy decisions, whether they're becoming sexually active or waiting to a later point in their lives to do so. This needs to be an integral part of the health education curriculum in public schools. Research consistently shows that comprehensive education programs, including information and skill building specific to abstinence and contraception, effectively prepare young people to make important life decisions. Research also shows that this translates into youth postponing sex, and if and when they do have sex, taking precautions to help reduce the risk of pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. House Bill 2509 sets a framework for more consistent implementation of age-appropriate, medically accurate sex education in public schools. The bill updates the language in current law and sets a more positive tone and approach. This is in line with the 2009 Strategic Plan on Youth Sexual Health, which supports school and community-based comprehensive sexuality education and youth development programs as integral to helping Oregon youth achieve positive health outcomes now and throughout their lives. Despite a decade of welcome declines, teen pregnancy rates in Oregon rose 3% in 2005 and another 6% in 2006. Data from the 2008 Oregon Healthy Teen Survey reflect that 48% of youth surveyed report having engaged in sexual activity. All of this underscores the importance of Oregon strengthening its efforts to provide young people the information and services they need to make and implement responsible decisions about their sexual behavior. It isn't just Oregon facing an increase in the teen pregnancy rate. It's also happening on a national level. Edward J. Sondick, director of National Center for Health Statistics at the CDC, reminds us that teen pregnancy is one of the key indicators for the health of the teen population because it not only reflects their health at this point, but it reflects their health and well-being for the next 20 to 40 years. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I respectfully ask that you support House Bill 2509 as a sound endorsement that better ensures the health, safety, and well-being of Oregon youth now and through their adult years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Judy Zimmerman. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2509. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. As a human sexuality educator at Portland Community College, I see firsthand every day the discrepancy in knowledge that our young people have regarding their sexual health. Too many young people enter my classroom without a baseline of medically accurate information regarding their sexual health. I think of a student who is unaware that her painful menstrual periods were not normal. She suffered in silence. I hear the misconceptions students have about threats to their sexual health and about what they can do to prevent pregnancy. By the time I see students in college, many of these misconceptions have become entrenched. Some students will also have become sexually active while holding to scientifically ungrounded perceptions. Our young people deserve access to all the information and resources available to them in order to make healthy decisions and adopt healthy behaviors before they get to college. My students frequently tell me that they wish their parents had spoken to them more on sexual matters. Parents want the best for their children, yet research clearly shows that many parents feel uncomfortable talking about sexuality. Many lack basic, medically accurate information on sexual health. In the 15 years that I've been teaching, I continue to hear students express gratitude for the sexual education course they're in because their parents had never talked to them about sexuality. Our schools can and should play a key role in providing youth with information to guard their sexual health. HB 2509 does not create a completely new approach to sex education, nor does it impose a new mandate on Oregon schools. This update to our sex education statute merely makes it clearer to schools that sex education must be age-appropriate, medically accurate, and should be taught as a fundamental part of health education programs. Please join me in supporting this bill. Now is a good time to make this small change to ensure that all Oregon youth are being provided age-appropriate, medically accurate sex education to keep them safe and healthy and to be able to realize their bright futures. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Gelzer, members of the committee, my name is Maggie Jenny, and I've been a peer educator for the Cascade AIDS Project in the teen-to-teen program for just about 5 months now. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 2509, which updates Oregon's current sex education law. As a peer educator, a lot of the questions that kids don't want to ask their health teachers get directed to me. Questions like, can I get AIDS from kissing, and my boyfriend has a cold sore, does that mean I have herpes? I'm glad to answer these questions. I've been trained to answer these questions. But teen to teen is just 12 people, and we can't tell everyone everything all the time. We need to ensure Oregon has an up-to-date sex education requirement in all public schools. I got started with the Cascade AIDS Project because I was passionate about medically accurate health education, particularly around sexuality. My human sexuality course had been turned into a general health course with a small section at the end for a guest speaker to make the mandatory HIV prevention speech. All students deserve their sexuality education to be completely comprehensive. We can't leave teenagers in the dark. Accurate sexuality education is so important, especially for my generation. I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like we're maturing a lot sooner. People shouldn't grow up thinking with misinformation about the ways to prevent pregnancy and STDs. Teen pregnancy numbers are on the rise, so accurate information is vital. Not only is my generation having sex earlier than those in the past, we're also really starting to speak up in a way that previous generations have not. 16 years ago, the teen-to-teen peer education program didn't exist. It wasn't until the early 1980s that HIV/AIDS brought young people together to speak out about the injustices being done to the people living with this deadly disease. Things are more open now, and my peers and I feel lucky to be living in a more tolerant era. When students take sex ed, they deserve to have the facts placed before them in a neutral way, in a safe space. Sexuality is still very much a delicate issue with a wide range of values, and the most appropriate way to address these issues is through age-appropriate and medically accurate information. The facts, free of personal bias, will make the world safer for me and my peers. We as teenagers are in the hands of the teacher when we take sex ed. We take this class because there is information we want to know. And when we ask a question, we should get an answer that is accurate and non-judgmental so that we can become the people we want to become, not because a health teacher told us what we do is wrong or right, but because we've had the facts and formed our own opinion. Please support House Bill 2509 and improve Oregon's sex education law. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm reading the OARs, and one of the problems I have in reading OARs is trying to follow the history, and it seems like the OARs, which I hope that's what the schools are using, because that's what they should be using. I mean, this, the law should have been changed when they changed the OAR, because the OARs weren't consistent with the law, so the OAR should never have been approved in the first place. And the last time they were changed was in 07, and before that in 2002. So my question is, this isn't going to change the way you practice. I mean, the rules are the rules, and obviously schools are violating the law by following the OARs. So I guess I have no problem with updating the law, but to say the change to the law is going to change the practice, I think is way overstepping the bound, because the OARs say everything that the law says. And did Department of Education change rules and not follow the law? Well, somewhat facetiously, Morgan.
Well, and Representative Maurer, I would debate that a little bit. Administrative rules change often. They're more flexible than the law, and certainly the administrative rules and what's within the law. I mean, this proposed change, it's not divergent with the original intent or scope of the law that was there. I think since this law was originally passed, we do have more definitional information. It's a more developed field. As Catherine was talking to us, you know, medically accurate, that means something.
Mm-hmm. And that medically accurate is in the OAR today, mm-hmm. without changing the law. Age appropriate is in the OAR.
But why
changing
the law to
Madam
meet
Chair.
The OARs?
We're changing the law to meet the
OAR. Madam Chair.
And I think the OAR was consistent with, I don't think that the current law prohibited medically accurate information from being shared. And I guess and we'll have this discussion in a work session, but it's hard for me to understand why we would not want students to have access to medically accurate information.
My point is, I totally agree. My point is that to say that the law is going to change the practice is not accurate. That the practice can be whatever the OARs allow now, and if you're not doing these things, then you should be doing it because it allows you to do it. So, I mean, I think this is maybe a much to do about nothing.
Thank you, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's still dependent, though, upon local school districts choosing whether or not they're going to do this. Is that correct?
No. Would you say that one more time?
It still depends on local school districts, or
no,
they can't opt out. School districts have to do this. It's not an if and or.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Then I have a question for.
All right. Question?
For Maggie, primarily. One of the observations that I have made, Maggie, are the mixed messages that teenagers are getting today. And in that context, is that part of the problem, or is that, because I'm thinking if we're getting these mixed messages out in our society, no matter what we do, our law is going to really help. And is sex education really going to help?
Could you repeat the question?
If you're a teenager, you are exposed to a lot of mixed messages out there, what's sexually appropriate and what's sexually inappropriate. And obviously it's a reflection of my age, because a lot of what I see, as far as I'm concerned, is sexually inappropriate for kids to be seeing. So having said that, you have people, teenagers, who are seeing this, and would the law itself or sex education in school be beneficial when your teens are getting these mixed messages? Am I making myself clear?
I might have a sort of biased opinion on this, just because I'm not really an average teenager in terms of the sex education I've gotten. I mean, I'm a peer educator, and I am one of the people
sending these messages that you're talking about, I suppose.
No, you're not. Oh. I'm talking about.
You mean no? She's not average. Is that what you
mean? No, she's not. It's not her messages that I'm talking about.
It's the message.
It's the constant exposure to sexual things on television, in advertising, and so when the teens come to you, does it matter that they're taking these human sexuality courses because they're getting exposed to something that makes them think that this kind of behavior is okay? You don't need to answer. I'm sorry. I don't mean to make it difficult for you.
No, it's okay. I think that in terms of this law really having the more accurate information and the more age-appropriate information will help to sort of combat these mixed messages that people are perceiving as inappropriate for teenagers, mostly because if we've all been given this mandatory accurate information about everything to do with sexuality, really comprehensive, then we can form our own opinions without completely succumbing to the bias of the media.
That's an excellent answer. Thank you very much.
Maggie, I don't think you mentioned what grade.
I'm a senior in high school.
You're a senior in high school. I look forward to seeing you campaign for something. You're very quick on your feet and very good with tough questions.
Thank you.
So thanks for taking our questions. It's a hard thing to come here, and I really appreciate your focus and willingness to do it. Representative Dembro.
I do have a point to make, Madam Chair, but I'm sensing one of our panelists might want to respond to Representative Van Orman's question, too.
Thank you, if I may.
Yes, please.
Chair Gelser, Representative Van Orman, there's consistent research that clearly shows that comprehensive sex education effectively helps young people to delay sex. It helps them, if they are having sex, to reduce the number of sexual partners. And if they are having sex, they're much more likely to use precautions to prevent unintended pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections. And within those comprehensive sex education programs, there's ample conversation and discussion around media literacy and taking a look at some of the, as you said, mixed messages that are out there, helping young people to analyze those, to be able to see through those, to be able to form responses to those messages and to pressures that they might experience in their lives. So I think it's very clear that comprehensive sex education does make a difference, and in fact, it's probably more important than ever, given the fact that there are so many of those media messages out there. Thank you.
And Representative Dembro, you
can comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I want to go back to the point about the OARs. Back in 2007, when the State Board adopted the new OARs, I was sitting on the State Board as the Community College Faculty Advisor. And I remember the conversation being that the OAR, the new OARs that were being approved were still consistent with statute, but with a slightly different emphasis. You know, the emphasis had shifted towards more evidence-based, you know, medically based, and the new curriculum was intended to really reflect that, to sort of take the more subjective, ambiguous value mm-hmm. aspects out and really make it more evidence-based. The thinking was that it was still within the statute, but that the statute would probably need to be addressed in the next session to make it clearly consistent with current practice. And I think that's precisely what we're here to do today.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further questions for this?
No, Madam Chair, it's really not necessary for the panel, but to respond to that, thank you. It's actually neat to have someone who was involved with the process. I guess my point is, you know, I asked the question, why are we deleting several sections in here? Well, now the question I would have is, why aren't we deleting three-quarters of this, because it's addressed in the OAR? The same answer that they gave me, that they want to delete the advise pupils of laws pertaining to their financial responsibility for children is in the OAR. So adding hepatitis C, why would we add hepatitis C? It's in the OAR. It seems like we're rearranging. Again, I have no problem with this. The OARs are there, and that's what should be implemented, and it's using Representative Dimbrough's, it's scientifically based, and I understand that. This is about the semantics of how bills are drafted and not about the content necessarily of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
I've been off and on the queue there. This question is for Judy.
Mm-hmm.
You are clearly an articulate, intelligent woman. And so as I looked at your last, and I'm really sincerely hoping you can maybe add some perspective to this for us. Your last sentence here, please join me in supporting it. Now is a good time to make this subtle change to ensure that all Oregon youth are being provided age-appropriate, medically accurate sex education, and it goes on to say a few things. And I sincerely ask this question, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time to make this subtle change. What were you referring to as that subtle change? Maybe that's the piece some of us are wrestling to put our arms around, because I can't imagine you through reading your testimony, you didn't just throw words in here. You thought them through and you knew what you were saying.
Yeah, I did read the bill, Representative Springer. I see the change is more of a clarification of what seems to already be in place. As an educator, I can see myself putting myself in the shoes of a local school board, trying to figure out what curriculum that is there from the state, from the state office of ed would fit my school district. And I'm imagining, as I read the original statute, the original bill, it seemed foggy and confusing. And some of the language here just seems to be a little clearer about what could go. I'm looking at page 1, line 19, line 20. That's part of what appealed to me, clarifying how to work with realistic threats to sexual health versus those that we perceive from media or from peers. I see clear guidance being potentially offered there to guide selection of curricula at the local level. And so when I said subtle, that's I was specifically thinking of that section.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think one of the other things, and this is going back to Representative Maurer, your comment about the OARs, I believe the piece in this, and I've said this before, that's most important is the medically accurate. And an administrative rule is much more easily changed than a statute. And I think it's appropriate that we make a change in statute to ensure that no Board of Education ever has the opportunity to change in rule and offer non-medically accurate information to students. And while I'm confident enough in the voters of Oregon and the people that would step up to serve on the state board, if we can look at the state of Kansas, for instance, where they have their state board of ed has made some really interesting changes through their administrative rule process that we would not want to see made in this case. So I think medically accurate is very important in law.
We've never seen that in Oregon, where the OARs were not exactly what we had intended them to be.
No, I would agree. I think all of us have had experiences where the OARs are not what we intended them to be, which is why it's very important that we be very clear. And I think on the key piece of this legislation to me is that medically accurate. And at the very least, I think we should be able to ensure that our students are receiving medically accurate information about their health.
Madam Chair.
Representative Thatcher.
Maybe. I think we're having more discussion up here than we are involving our panel here, so I apologize for this, but you were mentioning the medically accurate statement in there, and I can't imagine anybody disagreeing with that, but is there an issue with the current curriculum being medically inaccurate?
Representative Thatcher, I think that what Catherine Bradley was referencing earlier, since this statute has been passed originally, we now have definitional language that backs this all up, and medically accurate is one of those things. And as Representative Van Orman was alluding to, students get all sorts of information about sexuality and human sexuality, and not all of it is accurate, not all of it is medical, and certainly not all of it is medically accurate. But we do want to be sure that...
I'm talking about the curriculum here.
Correct. But I think that one of the reasons this is so important is that we have students who are exposed to so many kinds of messages, and when they're walking into a health education classroom and learning about health and learning about their bodies and learning about their futures, it has to be medically accurate. And I'm not arguing that anybody would oppose medically accurate information. In fact, I think that's why this is such a good bill. It puts into statute that in a health classroom we're going to offer medically accurate information to these students. Are there further questions for this panel? No. Thank you all very much.
Excellent testimony.
Alice Bartlett, please.
Chair Gelzer and members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak today. I'm not an expert in any respect as far as education or teaching, but I do represent 1,600 members of the American Association of University Women, and I'm not going to read my testimony to you, but our biggest concern is that, especially for young women, that they don't run the risk of becoming pregnant and thus living or increasing their chances of living in poverty, because once a teenager has a child, very often their schooling stops. And one of the main tenets that AUW stands for is for women to be financially secure. And so it's just that having appropriate sex education, which prevents teenage pregnancy, is extremely important to us.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Bartlett?
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to be heard on House Bill 2509 that has not had... Oh, yes, please. And anyone else that's not had the opportunity to sign up? Thank you. Welcome. And as you know, if you will start by stating your name for the record and then share your comments.
Thank you. My name is Lorna Walker, and what I'd like to say to you is that as you're discussing this bill, as the AAU representative indicated, for young women, young men, to be able to be financially able and stable is a very important thing, and having the opportunity to have a good knowledge base as far as their human sexuality is concerned allows them oftentimes to make decisions that bear a great influence upon what their financial stability may or may not be. Additionally, if we look at the history over a period of 100 years, one of the reasons for these bills having to do, or legislation having to do with human sexuality, is to provide a forum for discussion within the family. Because historically, for many years, there was not a vocabulary in most families for discussion of human sexuality. And there was an indication that there has been a rise in teen pregnancy. That would be probably an indicator that maybe there has been less of a forum for discussion of human sexuality within the family. So if we want to look down the road at the opportunities for young people, if we provide a good knowledge base, we are providing future generations a forum for discussion of human sexuality within the family that in generations past did not necessarily always exist. Any questions or comments?
Great. Thank you. Any questions for this witness? Thank you very much. And is there anyone else that would like to be heard today? No? Thank you very much. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A comment?
Of course.
A story?
A comment? A story? A song?
No songs right now. I left the guitar upstairs. Sorry. Before I took this gig, I used to travel a lot on airplanes and very little in cars. That has been reversed because I just drive down here and I no longer go to D.C. on a regular basis. Plane travel affords you opportunities for conversations you almost never can have otherwise. I had one time when I was reading a book called, in effect, The Triumph of Evolution, and the young man seated next to me was reading, in effect, The Triumph of Creationism. So we didn't talk until food came, and then food was put before us. I leaned over and said, "So, how's the book?" And we started talking, and it came out that, to make a long story, down to 2 minutes, we had some similarities, as we always figure out we do. And he was initially appalled that I worked with Planned Parenthood and challenged me about this and what this was doing to promote promiscuity with kids. And I said, "No, we're trying to deliver medically accurate information to kids." And as I was talking about this, and he came back with, "No, you're really getting them going. You're getting them riled up and promoting sexuality." And I said, "Well, thinking back to myself at that age, I had never been to Planned Parenthood, but, I seem to have those ideas anyway." And he kind of got this unusual look on his face, and he said, and he just told this very frank, honest, heartfelt story about getting his girlfriend pregnant in high school, and just said, "We had no idea what we were doing. We had no information at all." And then he just kind of sat there and shook his head until we thought of something a little more pleasant to talk about and moved on. But that's what I think everybody's trying to deal with here. I think I have no problem with putting some of the other language back in or addressing it in the OARs. I think the main thing that we heard there and a lot of the conversation here is about accurate information so that kids can use that info to offset the bump and grind on TV and everywhere else, right?
I wish it was just bump and grind.
I'm trying to contain it. Downly. Down. So that's all I have to say.
Wonderful. Thank you. Is this Monday?
Oh, only as a mother of young children would know. I don't know.
That's her.
Changing the subject. Is it possible, are we going to be having another discussion on this bill? I'm wondering if we can hear from the Education Department again, only because I'm wondering if any of this discussion, talk about medically accurate, is that really going to change the curriculum? I'm hearing that it's not, but then I'm hearing that it's a great change.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really confused on whether it's actually going to make the schools have to buy different books because they don't meet some person's, whoever's going to be in control of the OARs, definition of medically accurate.
Thank you.
I just want to know.
So my understanding is that no, this won't require any new books or any new mandates on local school district. My understanding as well with this bill is that it's been worked carefully by all the people that would be involved in the implementation and that the bill is therefore ready to go. There are no proposed amendments to the bill that I am aware of, and the bill is posted for a work session on Wednesday. We will have the fiscal back then, and I do intend that we'll work the bill on Wednesday. So if you have amendments that you're interested in doing for this bill, we need to have them on the table on Wednesday because we are going to work the bill on Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, and move it out. But we can. Morgan is still here if you have further questions for the department, and he's willing to come back up and do a third act.
If you say there's no change, then, and he's shaking his head no.
Great. Yeah. Great. Working
them out? The terms that we are adding to the statute are already in the OAR, and it was in 07, so the assumption is that the school districts haven't blown it off for a year or so, that they, in fact, have responded to any changes. And Representative Dimbro, Is that?
Yeah, I believe so. And so, our approving this bill is, just simply confirming the direction in which practice has been going.
Yeah, my concern is that we got, that normally you put the cart and then and they have a horse in front of it, that we have taken the horse and put it behind the cart and said, push.
Well, the horse is out of the barn.
You're right. And the horse is out of the barn.
And now we're going to catch up with them and
we're going to fix it.
And fix it.
All right.
Thank you. Are there any further comments? Questions? All right. Well, we'll come back on Wednesday, and there will not be another public hearing on the bill. We'll open this up in work session when we come back on Wednesday. So the public hearing on House Bill 2509 is closed, and I will adjourn the House Education Committee. Thank you.
Smaller. So.